Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who make fine art with needle and thread. Going classy once again this week because Mary Corbett's with us.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Mary.
Welcome.
It's been a long time, Mary.
It's good to be here.
It's been a long time. Yeah.
I think we've all been busy.
I know, but we gotta tighten that up. Yeah. So, all right, we got a ton of stuff to talk about, but I got curious when I was putting the stuff together for this one, because I wondered how long, you know, people have been bailing out of blogs left and right here in the last year, and I wondered how long has needle and thread been going. So I went back into your archives, and you know this, but on June 15th, if I have it right, on June 15th will be 12 years for needle and thread. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. That's impressive.
Oh, thank you. It is. There are people out there who have done it longer, though, in the needlework world, so.
Yeah, I'm sure, but that's still impressive. And it's, you know, doing it longer, but the body of work that you've built across the spectrum is pretty deep. I mean, it's pretty impressive. I don't know too many people who don't have you needle and thread down as the go-to site if they have a question. And those who don't should. Well, I mean, you know, and it's not just to suck up to you, but I mean, you really have built an incredible library of information. And, you know, I swear one more time, if I say something about something and you write to me and say, I wrote about this 5 years ago, I'm going to scream.
You know, sorry,
because it's quite all right, because I do look, you know, I look and like the last, because I figure, well, Mary had to write about it, so I'll go look there first. And the last one, I completely missed it. And it's like, oh, I can't believe I missed that. But you really have. You've covered everything and many things from several angles. And it's an incredible resource for needle workers. You know, and people look at needle and thread and say, well, that's embroidery. Well, no, it's not by any stretch. And I mean, to me, you're the one of the primary resources that any needle worker has available. And it's in 12 years, I just think it's impressive what you've done.
Well, thank you very much. It's getting to the point where I've started to forget what I've written about.
So I imagine, yeah.
That could be a good thing or a bad thing.
One of the things I think I like the most, though, is it's one thing to write about something and have it be an explanation that's good enough to follow. And I think a lot of people default to making videos in order for people to follow things. And I'm not a video person, right? So there's a lot of people that love to just go to YouTube to learn how to do something. And I usually resist that because I find it slow. And your photography, between just the photos that you show and the descriptions in words, are perfect. They're exactly what you need, and no more and no less. And they're just enough that you can follow, and they're clear, so you can follow it, and you don't have to go to YouTube for everything. And I love that. I really
Thank you.
Do.
Thanks a lot. That's good to know, because sometimes I think I talk too much, you know.
No, and that's the other thing, though, is it's nice to have something that's not always dry. You know, your personality is there as well. And so you feel like you're being taught by a friend, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, thank you. That's very nice. I like that. In fact, when I had the redesign on the website the last time, the people that I was talking to, they said, well, what do you want to impart with your website? And I said, well, I want it to be friendly. I don't want people to look at it and think that it's a business website,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I think they pulled that off okay.
I think so. Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah, no, it works. Well, in the former teacher in you comes out too. I mean, when Christine describes how you present information, that whole thing, everybody learns differently, and you do present the different ways, you know, by reading, by listening, by video, by watching. The, you know, everybody can learn in the way that they want to, and you hit all those points, and that's a difference maker too.
Because
not everybody can read and comprehend. You know, it's just not in them to read words and then translate that into action. It's just not in them.
And, right.
I mean, that's the way I learned. So I, you know, I appreciate the written word, but everybody can't do that. And,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping to ramp up the video again. Sorry, Christine.
Yeah, no. And I appreciate it. That's most people's preferred way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm definitely not the normal person. So it's hard, you know, it's hard to find people that are willing to sit and actually type out instructions.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I prefer actually writing instructions out to the videos. Myself.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what you find to be more work, the videos or the writing, and I was going to guess the videos because that would be for me. It'd just be tedious work for me.
Well, it's the video for me because there's always a learning curve, and it seems that, you know, with the rate that things change online. Mm-hmm. You're always having to keep up with the new technology and switch things out. And I know I've got some old video on the website that I really have to redo. And so I've got all the equipment set up to start doing that. But at the same time, that's the really old video. But even the old video that's not really old, it already needs to be redone too. So every time I sit down to, you know, work out, okay, what videos am I going to do? I look at my list and I think, well, I have to redo all these videos because everything's 4K now. And, you know, so there's just this learning curve every time that you have to do something new. And the technology takes time. I mean, I know everybody thinks technology is a huge time saver, but when you're on the other side of it, it's a huge time sink if you're trying to do other things too, you know?
Oh, that's, yeah. And that's what, yeah, a lot of people don't realize. I mean, just in, because to do these podcasts, just to record them, I've learned enough about audio technology to get the job done and nothing more, because it's a completely different language. It's a different world. And, you know, to edit audio files, I've learned enough to get it done. Mm-hmm. And, every time that there is some kind of an update, I just freak out because, you know, then you got to go test and make sure that everything is still intact and that something didn't go haywire. No, exactly. And so then, you know, there's 2 hours of monkeying around. And then if something did go goofy, then you got to figure it out and straighten it out. And, oh no, I know what you mean. And it's wonderful because you can download these things and have them on your phones and do whatever. But boy, the back end of it, man, I just, yeah. And Audition is what I use to record these things, and Adobe Creative Cloud, you know, that's their cash flow. So they have to do something to their software every now and then to justify that monthly cost. And sometimes I think, you know, they're just making stuff up. And then they break it, you know, then they break it. And it's like, come on, you guys, just leave it alone. I know I have to pay. Just leave it alone.
No, it's the same thing with anything. The video technology is the same way. I don't use Premiere One, which is the Adobe video stuff.
Yeah.
Just because it's so heavy to use. I use Final Cut Pro and I started by using iMovie, you know, way back in the day. And every time I go back to Final Cut Pro to say, okay, I'm ready to do this. Now I just need to figure out. And all of a sudden the interface is different and I have to start over again, you know.
So true. Yeah, so true.
At the risk of sounding like a complete dinosaur, I feel like this is the point at which, you know, this is one of those moments where people advise me that it's okay to spend money to buy time.
That's right.
And this is where I think that we should pass the torch. And this is where you hire your young teenage son at a very, very reasonable / almost child labor violating rate to do these things for us. Because they are up on all of these things and they pick things up very quickly because this is what they do in their spare time for fun. And you would be doing them a service because they are maintaining skills that will be marketable.
True.
And you'd be buying time.
That's right. And
Gary, I'm just advising. I'm just thinking from a business perspective, this may be advisable, and I may or may not have said 15-year-old that may have a summer available.
who's sporting a big fancy plaque for leadership and accomplishment in computer science, yes.
Correct.
Well, there you
correct.
Go.
So we may be able to take advantage of that.
So, Mary, 12 years ago, because what I put down here, the point of this site, you wrote, the point of the site is not to instruct the reader on every tiny nuance of embroidery, rather to supply you with a resource base and discuss various techniques, pitfalls, troubleshooting, and all the joys and frustrations that come with hand embroidery. Do you feel now, 12 years later, that you've pretty well held to that, that you've delivered that, or was that a nice starting point and you've now gone off in a different direction?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, no, I think that I've stuck to that as far as resources and, just the overall discussion of the joys and pitfalls of hand embroidery.
Ooh, I made her think. Oops.
I know. Well, the thing is, I have to, when I started the blog, remember it was a hobby. It was a hobby blog.
Right, right.
I was still teaching. I had a career, and I had a stable income,
right.
That type of thing. And then once everything grew so big with the website, I decided, just to go in the direction of keeping that alive. And so I have to move it in some kind of direction other than just talking about, the joys and pitfalls of needlework. The ebooks and things like that I sell are a necessity to keep it going. But I don't think I've strayed too far from that. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I don't think you have, but what you write and what's in your head are not always an exact match, and look what you personally have experienced from that hobby start to where you are now. You've been through a lot of change in a lot of fronts with what was once your hobby. And, mm-hmm. and to me, the cool thing is, the advice is never try to make a business out of your hobby because you'll grow to hate your hobby. And you clearly that has not happened to you. And I think that's something too.
I think I look at that in a different way. I think that if you can make your hobby into a living, then it's a real blessing, it's, and still love it. It's a blessing. It's not.
Yeah. If you can do that and still love it. Yes.
That's yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't really have other hobbies, I guess, but I have enough of a life, with my family and everything else that it's not. Well, it is pretty much all I do, actually. What am I talking about? but I have, I have supportive family. I have a community and friends and everything that, and then I have the website and the support from all my readers. And it just makes it's not a chore at all. It's just a pleasure, So I guess I'm lucky.
Yeah, and that is one dynamic that isn't always in place is the community of readers and followers that you have that you get to interact with all the time, that are supportive, that you get to help. That's a dynamic that isn't always in that, convert your hobby to a business routine.
Right.
And I think that's actually what makes it obviously is what makes Needle and Thread what it is, having that kind of community and being able to interact with so many people. It just makes it fun. It's like I mean, you remember, Gary, when you taught and you'd go into a classroom, no day would ever be the same.
No.
Because you're dealing with people, you're dealing with children or older, you know, youth, and just people in general. So every day it's different. It's not routine. And that's the case with blogging too, because every day is different. I'm always interacting with different people, and you know, that keeps it fun and exciting.
Yep. Well, it's pretty neat. Pretty neat. Okay, now I'm dying to know. I'm dying to know about the new space and what you're doing. This sounds, I can't tell you how excited I am about this. I think this is really neat. So you got a new space.
I did. I was I've been looking for about a year and planning. And my plan was that by the end of, well, actually, it's been 2 years now. So my long-term plan was by the end of 2018, I have to have another space. I can't work out of my home. Because I do have to take the business in some sort of direction other than what I could do in my home. Otherwise, it's just going to stagnate. So
the refinished garage wasn't getting it done, huh?
Well, the garage has everything else in it too, you know, from from the house, you know, because the house is very small. I've been thinking for a couple of years along those lines, and then right before I left on vacation to meet with my sisters on the East Coast, a little duplex came available. It's actually, well, it's half of a duplex, or I don't know what you would call that. Is it the duplex or half of the duplex? But it's a building that's split in half. And some people live on one side, and I have my studio on the other side. And it came available 2 days before I was leaving.
There's timing for you.
I know. And I actually knew the people who owned it, and I called right away and I said, look, I want to look at it, and I'm possibly pretty interested in it to use as a studio. So we met and came over and looked at it, and it's not, like I said on my website, it's no Pinterest perfect little palace, you know. It's a duplex that was built in the 80s, I think, and it's, you know, it needs some updating, but it's nice, but it's weird. It's really weird.
How?
Okay.
I still feel like I'm in somebody else's house.
Well, that's always true when you move into somebody. I've lived in my new house for about a month and a half, and I still feel like I'm living in someone else's house.
Yeah.
Every day I feel like I'm invading. So like I'm an intruder.
That's just it. I walk in and I don't want to turn any music on, or I don't want to make any kind of mess, which is actually a good thing to have that mentality. You know? But I feel like I opening the cabinets or anything like that, that I'm prying into somebody else's space, but of course they're empty. So in that case, it's a little weird, but it is nice to have the space. And now I'm going to be able to have classes, you know, local classes. And so I've kind of come full circle, because when I started Needle and Thread, it was the result of teaching children's classes during the summer. And then as it grew, and as I was still involved in, you know, teaching school and everything, I didn't have a place to do that anymore in a convenient way. So that just fell by the wayside after about 4 summers. And then this year, I'm actually starting again. So in July, I have... I'll have 3 weeks of classes for children. And I'm really excited about that.
That is going to be great. Yeah.
Now, by children, by children, what do you mean? Middle school aged? What are we talking about?
Well, I have three age groups. So it's 9 to 10, 11 to 12 and 13 to 15.
Okay.
And there are 32 children signed up, 32 kids signed up.
Already? Wow,
and,
that's great.
Yeah. And they are, well, that's the limit, actually. So it's five classes. It's they're broken down into five classes that'll meet twice a week over 3 weeks. So.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Yeah, so, it'll be fun. My niece is helping me. She's in fact, she's probably going to end up. I think I'm going to be her assistant. especially with the little children. She's a kindergarten assistant teacher for kindergarten, yeah. And she's really good with little kids. And she's been embroidering since she was about 10. And so she's going to actually take on the little ones, and I'll help her. And then I'll work probably more with the older youth, and she'll help me. So it's a joint effort.
That's tremendous. That's just tremendous. It'll be fun. Yeah.
I can't wait. Yay.
Teaching again. Yes.
Well, it's just good to, for me, it's that idea that we've got to get young people interested in the needle arts and to see needlework as a valuable art form and to understand that it's a good thing to have a hobby, you know? Mm-hmm. I think so many youth today don't have hobbies. So they're used to being entertained or they're used to being consumers, but not necessarily doers themselves. And so to give them something to do where they can feel pride in their accomplishments, I think that goes a long way to their success in anything they do, you know? So I'm just excited to get a new generation of kids around here that hopefully through the years will continue to develop needlework skills. We'll see.
That's great. Now, are you doing this on your own, or are you working through like the local park district, or how?
No, it's just my business. It's part of my business. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, that's great. And you were able to get that many. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, and we have a waiting list. So.
Oh, geez. Wow.
So we'll see. And hopefully it's something that we can even continue kind of during the school year. It could be an after school kind of activity, that type of thing. But I just want to get the first 3 week chunk of classes right. over, kind of like an embroidery camp, and yeah. then see how it goes, evaluate, you know, what went well, what didn't, what we need to adjust, and then go from there. So
I'll be most curious to see how many adults come to you as a follow-up to, hey, would you do this for us?
Oh, it's our, yeah, I already have that. That's already going on. Yeah. And I've had to say, well, I want to get these children's classes going and see how they're going to, you know, work, because to me, they're perhaps, the more important, focus, even though I know that I've had this conversation with some people in the industry who have said, well, you know, the children are not the ones who are going to be able to pay your bills because they're not the ones that can, you know, support the industry. You know, they're not the ones that are going to be buying kits or doing this or that. And I know that's true, but I don't think that that's the end all of everything. I think that, well, certainly if you want a generation coming up that is going to be involved in the industry, you better start teaching them now, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I kind of flinch at that assessment. I'm not so sure.
Yeah, but it's a good long view.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know. You got to start somewhere, and kids are where it's at. That's
yeah, and it's just that kids today, they have a need, you know?
Well, I think maybe the key, and maybe we've hit on something there too, is maybe the problem, you know, so we talk all the time, what is the problem with getting younger people involved in the hobby? And one of the bigger things is cost, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe part of the problem is that the marketplace is not providing things at a price point that is accessible to younger people. So if you get younger kids involved and interested, maybe the industry is not serving them by providing things that are accessible. So maybe the problem is that, yeah, they're not buying kits because if the kits are $80 or if a painted canvas is $120, then maybe printed canvases are not the way. So maybe going back to the old, you know, 1970s where you could buy, you know, a kit for $12 or, you know, like the, there are little tiny little, you know, smalls mm-hmm. that kids can do. So maybe more of those things being available could support, you know, an industry and could support young kids coming up through to the point where they are older and can buy more expensive things.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, I understand the argument, and it was in the spirit of advice for helping me as a business, you know.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. it's not all it's as anybody in the needlework industry will say, it's not like you're going to get rich in this kind of business.
Sure.
And I'm not trying to. But sometimes it's difficult to make a stable, you know, living wage because things are expensive today. So that was just by way of giving, you know, some helpful advice. But I still think that, and really, supplies are not that expensive for a child to learn needlework. Because a skein of floss, two skeins of floss, even, you know, 10 skeins of floss and a flour sack towel, okay, you might spend $15 right. with a hoop, you know, and there you have it. So it's not that expensive for children, but yeah, I just think that, well, for me, I just want to get kids started and enthusiastic about embroidery again. So that's my plan. And then as we see how that progresses and how those 3 weeks work out, then I'll see what else I can do, you know?
Well, you have the audience. That's great.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's a small, you know, I live in a small Midwestern town and everybody knows everybody. It's not like living on the East Coast, you know, Christine.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Yeah. No, it is. It's a small town. Everybody knows everybody. There's, you know, a lot of families, and so it's a good place to be. Yeah.
All right. So you bought this place.
Well, no, I rent.
All right. You rent this place. However you financially handle it, that is basically a home. So now I'm curious if you're gonna make it into a needlework studio. How do you break the space down? How I assume the classroom is the living room.
That's right.
You know, so how do you break this down? I'm curious because I've thought since you first posted that, I thought, oh man, imagine having that kind of space. What would you do with it? How would you work it?
It actually gets eaten up a lot faster than you'd think. So you're right about the living room. You walk into the place and it's just like any flat or, you know, duplexy type thing built in the 80s. You walk in and you're pretty much walking into the living room, but it is the biggest room. So that's where I'll have classes. It's big enough that I have a couple tables and chairs, and I still have a small stitching area for myself in front of the window, because it's the only really big window in the whole apartment. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then there are two bedrooms. And the larger bedroom is where I have supplies and tables for sorting and, you know, kitting and even doing work for myself. My thread cabinets are in there, stuff like that.
Oh, that has to be a huge, huge step forward for you right there to have a room to store and sort. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, And I have a sewing machine in there too for, you know, finishing. And then the other bedroom is smaller, but that's where all my office work is. That's where I am right now. And I also have a setup for video and photography in here. And I have a small table for just general artwork, designing, stuff like that. So the office is all the non-embroidery part of the work.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other two rooms are basically the embroidery part. And then there is a kitchen and a bathroom.
Good to have.
Yeah, but I haven't... I'm not outfitting the place like a second home or anything, because I can't afford, you know, a second home. It's just pretty basic. There's really nothing extravagant furniture wise or anything, which is fine, you know, because it works. And but I have used Craigslist. Craigslist is great. So got a couple things on there that I needed. And, you know, I have two cups and two glasses and two spoons. I don't have a tea kettle yet, but, you know, I don't really need the kitchen for much of anything. Although it would be fun, looking into the future, if I can get some local classes going with adults and the older youth, to have, you know, your little stitch and sip sort of. Mm-hmm. Groupy things, that would be fun. So there's a kitchen for that. And that's it. Oh, and a washer and dryer. There's a little laundry cubicle, which is nice to have. Yep. So that's it.
Sounds nice to me, by golly.
Yeah, but it is still, it's still a little weird. I'm not settled in completely, but I've gotten to the point where I'm over here at 9 o'clock in the morning and I'm working on a schedule. I still get up early and do my email and everything from home. And then I come here like I'm going to work. So I think that if I can keep myself doing that type of thing, it will begin to feel less like I'm in somebody else's house. I hope. We'll see.
Yeah, you get a little decoration up and burn a little scented candle and it'll start to be like you. Yep.
Oh, gosh. Except for the scented candles.
No, not going to do that, huh?
No.
I loved the post you had put up recently about your the quick finishes on the little canvases, talking about decorations.
Yeah. Those were really fun. And
yeah.
The thing is that when I had to start moving everything, of course, that's when I realized... Wow, I have a lot of stuff, but I have a lot of boxes and binders of just little samples that I've stitched over the last 12 years just for the website. And I started looking at all those and I thought, I'd really like to put these up and kind of display them, but how are you going to do that, you know, in a way that's affordable? And the canvases came to mind just because I like that, the cleanliness of them, you mm-hmm. know? And it's minimal. They're not fussy. They're not floofy or anything. So I thought, well, I'll just try it. This might be stupid, but I'm going to see how I like it. And I started stapling them together, and I was like, gosh, I like this a lot. So now I just have to figure out how to group them and start hanging them up. But
yeah.
It's fun.
One of the things that I struggle with too is just the idea, you know, going back to the idea of cost, that, you know, there's such a high price of entry to get the work done. And then you sit down to finish and you realize that even framing or any of those things, unless you are good with a sewing machine and you can finish something that way, the price of framing becomes really astronomical. So, you know, I'm always looking for things, and I love the idea of the putting them on canvases, but then even just pinning them to ribbons, and the idea that then you can swap them out.
That's
you're not
it.
Committed to holes in the wall. You know, it's such a nice way that you can stitch as many things as you want, and then you're not pinned into this, well, then I can never finish them, or display them. You know, you can really kind of change your environment as much as you want without a tremendous outlay.
That's right. So that's, yeah. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, that was great.
The other thing though, too, is, well, when it comes to framing, I've gone to thrift stores and found, you know, the secondhand yep. frames and stuff, or mm-hmm. taken paintings or prints or whatever, old family photos, whatever, out of very nice frames and used those, because once you know the concept of, you know, blocking and stretching and lacing up your own needlework, it's easy enough to frame a piece, you know? So
yeah.
So that's also a good way to do it, but I don't even want to lay out that much expense.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm such a tightwad.
We have a yeah. Well, you know, and you know, raising a kid for me, I look at okay, very expensive frame or a semester's worth of college that I need to save up for. So,
right.
But we have a store called Restore, which is a Habitat for Humanity. It's like a charity organization, so they take. It's almost like a Salvation Army, but contractors that are ripping apart a kitchen, and they take the old kitchen and they'll give it to Restore. So it's uh-huh. got the weirdest combination of old, you know, ripped, you know, 17 pounds of mismatched tile and all kinds of yeah. weird stuff like that. But they have old frames like that too.
Yeah.
But I'll often walk through there and do exactly that. Like look at things, either frames or, but then also weird things like a headboard. Like, what could I do with that?
Right.
You know, there's all kinds of strange things like that, that, you know, big pieces of wood that you could find a way to use. But I've done exactly that, you know, and they'll have an old piece of needlework, which is, you know, it feels criminal in a way that, you know, this is something that someone stitched
yeah.
30 years ago and they're selling it for $2
yep.
and you feel sad. Like you almost want to have a funeral for it because, you know, but you know, the frame is worth something. So,
yeah.
you know, and yeah, I feel terrible on some level. But yeah, the frame is good and the backing is good. And
yep.
I'm happy
I've done
to,
that too.
Yeah. To use the frame for something.
Yep. I say with the old needlework found at thrift stores, I found some pieces here and there. I don't do a lot of thrift store shopping just because I'm not a shopper. But when I started, especially getting this place at least a little bit together, I did start looking around a little more at thrift stores. And I don't have a problem with coming across an old piece of needlework, you know, from the 80s or the 70s that's not in good shape and that really doesn't have any sentimental value to anyone anymore because they put it in a thrift shop, you know?
Yeah.
Or somebody put it in a thrift shop. So, and it's not anything that I would use to display or anything like that. So I if there's nothing about the piece that's in any way attractive or useful for me, or even that I can garner any kind of information or learning from, you know, then I bury it. Well, I don't bury it. I just pitch it. You know, and you do feel bad because you know that somewhere someone put a lot of time into that, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and it was important to them, but that person doesn't have any connection to me. And so
I'm just wondering who officiates a needlework funeral.
I don't know. I have no idea. I've never actually buried it. You
just
know,
a random thought,
I've
you
thrown
know.
It away.
No, I haven't either. But you know, I take a moment to you know
yeah,
to
right.
think about it though, because somebody put a lot of time into that.
That's
and
right.
and you're right. Maybe somebody that was just their piece of mindless needlework while they were watching Magnum PI. You know, you don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't True. Meaningful to them either. You're
yeah.
absolutely right.
Yep.
Magnum
PI. I know. MASH.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
But yeah. So I have felt guilty about that before, but now I think I've gotten over that kind of.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Magnum PI. Jeez.
Excellent. And that's not even dating yourself, you know.
No.
Magnum PI is just the 80s.
Well, I watched it for the car, just for the car. But then, when you see the reruns and Tom Selleck with the tight short white shorts,
oh God,
who dressed that man?
That's right. The funny thing is that everybody else was dressed like that too.
Yes. So.
Yeah.
Okay, you did a road trip, and I had this vision. I had this vision of Mary Corbett on a road trip, and that's one suitcase seat belted into the front seat. And the rest of the car full of needlework. Ooh, I think I was pretty close.
No. No, you weren't.
Oh.
So I took a light, and I took a small stand, and I took one tote bag that had needlework stuff in it. It was a good size tote bag, but.
Okay.
And, so that's really all I took needlework wise. I had plans to, there were some people in the East Coast that I wanted to visit to see some projects that are going on that I think they'll start marketing, you know, kind of information on them pretty soon this year, that I'm kind of excited about. But I couldn't actually work that into my schedule. So I had to cancel that. And then I had a whole list of needlework shops that I wanted to go to, and invariably, every time I landed in a place, it was the day the shop was closed.
Of course.
Happened, that happened, I think, four times. Uh-huh. So I was in Louisville, Kentucky for a little bit, and I wanted to get over to the EGA headquarters, but then I realized that they don't actually have, I guess, a place that you can just pop in. Business hours or whatever. And I didn't have the opportunity to reach out and say, hey, I want to make an appointment. So that, and I wasn't in Louisville long enough to actually do that because it was right at the end of the trip. And I was just eager to get home at that point. And, I did make it to a couple museums, and that was about it. And I managed one morning of about 2 hours of stitching. So
the entire time?
Yeah. I just thought, wow, 2 hours for all this stuff that I brought with me. That, you know, took me more time to prepare to take it.
Well, see, the question comes up because, I mean, I travel by plane, and so I know what I take when I travel. You know, it's what will fit in the suitcase and what I can do if I'm awake in the evening in a hotel room, but not so much that if I get home and do nothing, I'm going to be upset with myself, you know. But we're going to St. Louis, and we're renting a house for 2 weeks in August. I know. Mm-hmm. St. Louis, heat, humidity in August. Yeah. Smart move there. Yeah. But
I'll be there in July, by the way. So
okay.
We're just going to miss each other. Sorry.
So
but go ahead.
We're going to rent a house. So I have place that I can haul things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I have to contain myself because, you know, this is an opportunity to take the bigger needlework stuff and set it up. And not have to, you know, always put it away and leave it set up for those 2 weeks and be able to stitch whenever I have a chance. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what I'm going to do. But, you know, for me, it's the needlework. And then I have to take my bike because mm-hmm. riding a bike in St. Louis and in the St. Louis area is fantastic. So
it is, especially in August when it's 110 degrees. Good.
That'll make you get up early in the morning.
Right.
get up and get back. Yeah. Yeah. So you kept it to a minimum, and then when you stitched for essentially no time, then you weren't kicking yourself.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, this is what I've discovered over the years, because every time I've done something similar where I've gone somewhere and I've taken needlework with me, it's either the scenario I just gave you where I get in maybe 2 hours at the beginning of the, excuse me, the whole vacation, and then nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Or just nothing. So it has never panned out for me that it's been worth the trouble of the packing and the preparation of projects and all that kind of stuff. It just never works out because I end up, you know, wanting to do or see or visit, and needlework just doesn't play into it. And then by the time, you know, you're settled down in the evening, which we rented a house as well, so we were all together the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the evening you settle down and you're chatting and visiting, or, you know, sitting out on the deck just staring at the ocean or whatever. So, it just never... I never got back to it. And I think that's okay, though, because, you know, I do it all the time. So it was truly a vacation.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for you, a break. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And see, for you, it'll be... Your needlework will be a legitimate part of your vacation, you know?
Yes.
And for me, it was like taking along the office work in a way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Different for me, definitely. Yeah, because I scramble some weeks just to get a couple hours in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So I was determined. I made up my mind after that trip, and I was unpacking and dragging stuff out of my car after driving from Louisville to Kansas.
There's an exciting drive. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know. But I made it. It was a quick drive, you know. So I got home at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I started unloading the car. And what had happened was, from the time I left Kansas to the time I got back to Kansas, which was supposed to be spring, apparently spring never happened, and it was summer. So I got back, and it was 100 degrees, and I'm unloading all this stuff out of my car. I'm thinking, never again. I'm not going to do this again. You know, from now on, I'm just going to say, you know what? You're not going to get to your needlework, so don't even take it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I made that decision and that resolution. And I know that in a couple of years, when we do it again, I'll probably do the same thing. You know? And I'll think, oh, well, maybe, just maybe, you know, so I'll take it with me and then I'll
not do it.
Not do it. That's right.
So. It's such an interesting dynamic, because that's one of the things that I quit doing for our local Needlepoint Guild meetings, is I would have a tote bag and load up a bunch of stuff, and I'm going to stitch this at the meeting. Because there's a lot of ladies that show up with their lights and their table stands, and they literally stitch the entire time. And it seemed like every time that I would haul stuff, I'd get it set up, and then I'd be talking to someone, and then there'd be the program, and then it'd be time to go home. And same thing. Why did I haul this? So now I don't even take it anymore. I don't even pretend I'm going to take it. Yeah. I just go to the meeting and talk to people and listen to the program and go home. And this doesn't
fit. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Well, so. It's the way I do it. So whether it's right or wrong, I don't care.
Yeah. And I have a hard time, I think, more now than I used to. I used to be able to stitch and visit with people. But now when I stitch, and maybe it's because it's become business for me. I mean, I haven't lost any pleasure. It's not that it's unpleasurable. It's just that I focus so much, and I'm trying to make progress.
Right, you have an agenda.
Yeah, so it's harder for me now to actually visit with people while I'm stitching. So whenever we have a little crochet night at my mom's house, and some of her granddaughters crochet and their friends and everything. And they all come over and they sit around and crochet. And it would be a perfect time for me to sit around and, you know, embroider and maybe glean some converts. But but I can't stitch like that and talk and carry on the kind of conversation that, you know, 22, 24, 26-year-olds carry on. And really concentrate on what I'm stitching on, you know, because it's mostly just talking and laughing and visiting, except that they're all crocheting like fiends. And I'm sitting there thinking, I can't stitch and pay attention, you know?
It's a different kind of attention being paid to embroidery than it is to crochet, because crochet is so repetitive most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, depending on what you're doing, it doesn't have to be, but a lot of it can be.
Yeah. And perhaps that's it, but I'm at the point where I just, my social things are my social things and my stitching things are my stitching things, you know, and they don't always cross, but maybe that'll change a bit when the kids' classes get going and things like that. We'll see.
but that's like Christine with knitting too. You know, how many knitters have you seen throughout the years who can sit in any room anywhere?
Yeah.
And be fully engaged, and you know, and the scarf is growing by the minute.
That's right.
And but that doesn't. I've never done it, so it seems to me that's one of those things you can almost do by feel, and again, so repetitive that you can do two things at once quite easily.
Yeah.
Well, it absolutely is by feel. It in fact, my great grandmother taught me. Well, she tried to teach me how to crochet. And it was 100% by feel because she was almost 100% blind by that point. And I say she tried to teach me how to do it. And I couldn't learn. It wasn't that she couldn't teach me. I couldn't learn because she was so fast that I couldn't see what her hands were doing.
Yeah.
And she could churn out a blanket in a weekend because she would just keep doing, you know, the same thing over and over and over and over again. And so she would do that while she was listening to, you know, Magnum PI or something like that. And, you know, it didn't require, you know, like if you're doing embroidery, you're looking at a pattern or you're looking at what you're, you know, you're following a design you've drawn or something like that. With crochet, a lot of times you have the pattern in your head already. And you're just, you know, if you're doing granny squares, you know, I could do I haven't done one in 5 years and I could do one off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So it's totally different. You know, you don't have to think.
Yeah.
So you can talk. Well, you know, if you don't have to think this, you kind of have to think.
Yeah. Yeah. I see what you're saying. It's not, I think again, it depends on the type of stitching though.
Yeah.
Like if you were knitting a lace, you know, a lace shawl, for example,
that would be different.
Or if you're embroidering, for example, gold work, something that takes concentration, maybe stump work or something, you know, that's different. If you're just stitching stem stitch on a flower sack towel, you probably should be able to do that and talk at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't gotten to the point where I've passed the point where I can, because I used to do it all the time. I just now it's something that I focus on to get done, you know?
So. Right. Stem stitch on a flower sack towel. Sounds like a Broadway play to me.
You should write one.
Yeah. Just think about how that could be. That sounds deep. Yeah. So we're going to run out of time, and we got to talk about thimbles because we had a listener ask, but first I want to talk about, you posted just the other day about adult coloring books, and you had done one with the birds some time ago.
Hummingbirds.
Yeah, I just loved watching that. And then you had this article recently, and you know that adult coloring book thing was incredibly hot for a while, and I don't know if it still is or not. I don't pay attention, but when I was reading this article that you published the other day about adult coloring books as a resource, It really hit me that almost, if you're going to do embroidery, almost smart to go buy a bunch of adult coloring books just so you can take them apart and take pieces out of, because there's all kinds of designs in there. And the point you were making was don't worry about the entirety of what's on a page. Worry about the things that are the pieces and parts that are in there that you can pull out and use. And I thought it was just a brilliant source for stitching designs.
Yeah, and I think they're great for people who have a hard time coming up with designs, you know?
Yes.
But they want to, say, stitch something away from a kit, and they're ready to try something that's not a kit, but they're not good at design yet, or they haven't been able to, you know, tackle drawing something. Because there's such a vast array of those types of books now, and they cover all kinds of different subject matters. So, you know, whether it's travel or, you know, cityscapes or, you know, architectural detail, art, reproductions of, not reproductions, but, you know, line drawings from William Morris, which was the one that I wrote about, or just fantasy little images, whatever it is. There's a whole vast just array of subject matters out there in those type of books. So why not? If you want to stitch it, who's to stop you?
Right. Well, and that's the thing is opening up your mind and realizing that because it's produced as a coloring book, that's not its only use.
Right.
And you know, I looked at that design you had there because you really got my wheels spinning, and I started mentally just taking pieces out of that design and thinking, all right, if I took this piece and this piece, what could I do with it?
Mm-hmm.
And you could start to see different small designs come together, and I'll make this a green,
And I've gotten questions about that before. Isn't that a copyright violation? It's not a copyright violation. It's if you bought the coloring book, that you can use it to embroider those images, or to color them, or to paint them, you know, whatever you want, as long as you're not commercially doing something with them. If it's for your own personal use, go for it. Do what you want with it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I've gotten over the tracing onto linen.
So, yay.
Because that, you know, that was my fear. Because so I took your alphabet ebook.
Okay, and stitch sampler.
Yeah, that. And pulled out some letters. And then I cut some squares of linen that I got from Needle in a Haystack. And that Alba linen that you, boy, that's nice. I see why you use it all the time. And then I sat down, I bought a little $30 light board, LED light board thing.
Yeah.
And just with a real hard pencil, I thought, all right, I'm going to tape these down, square them up, and see what happens. And by golly, it was no big deal at all. I don't know what I was fretting about. So yeah, I sat there and did a half dozen letters in, let's keep going here.
That's right. You're just tracing.
Yeah. And it worked out great. Yeah.
Good.
I just did it faint so I could see it, but it wouldn't dominate the, or you know, be some ugly thing with lead all over the place. And yeah, it worked out great. It was easy.
Good.
So my message to other people who are freaking out like me, don't worry about it. Just go for it. Yep.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. I knew we'd run out of time. All right. So okay. Shannon Notstad.
Mm-hmm.
Why does Mary not use thimbles?
Because Mary didn't grow up using thimbles.
And there you go.
That's a very good answer.
I think thimbles are something that you have to... I could make myself use one and get accustomed to it, but I didn't grow up using one. So if you grew up using a thimble when you learned to sew or embroider, it's very easy to use a thimble, and you actually feel naked without it. You know, not your finger feels naked without it. If you didn't grow up with using a thimble, to put that onto your finger, it feels like you've added an extra finger or something to your hand. It's just awkward. So I didn't grow up with it. I use different things if I need to help me, you know, pull a needle through or push a needle through, or if I'm getting a little hole in my finger. And I like the little silicone things that I wrote about, but I don't use a thimble because I didn't grow up with it. And it hasn't, I mean, I'm not sad about it. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. Well, there you go, Shannon. She didn't.
But thanks for asking, Shannon.
I did find, when you talk about those rubber things for pulling things through, now, and I put down here on the list, Mary McGuire, the last time I did a video with her, we got quite a chuckle out of her Wubbers pliers, which I'd never heard of, and what a crazy name. And she gave me a pair of Wubbers, it's W-U-B-B-E-R-S, and you actually look it up, and there's a million designs. They're toothless pliers.
Right.
And so I tried one a couple weeks ago because I was stitching with Krynek thread and I couldn't get it to pull through to anchor it down. And I'm going to put a needle I don't care about on here and I'm going to try these Wubbers pliers and watch them destroy the needle, but I'm getting this thread through, you know. didn't make a mark on the needle at all, and that pulled right through, and it was terrific.
Right. Yep.
So yeah,
it's nice to have little tools like that, isn't it?
Yep. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yep. And I'm getting a bit of an array of them.
I know. That's the danger.
Yeah. Yep. So, okay. Well, there we have it. We've settled the
thimble question.
Thimble issue. Yeah. There we have it. Okay, Mary, we got to do this more often.
Yeah, anytime. Just drop me a line.
We'll do that.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It was good talking to both of you.
Appreciate it. Thanks to everybody for listening. If you want to, we keep forgetting to do this, but if you want to keep up with the Fiber Talk things, just use your favorite podcast app and subscribe, and you'll get them automatically. Or subscribe on YouTube. And because they're all put up as FlossTube videos now. They're just still pictures, but you can get them there, so you can subscribe there. Or at the end of every of the page for each podcast, you can just register and you'll get an email every time we post something. And that way you'll get notified immediately when Mary Corbett is with us. That's it.
Lucky you.
All right. Thanks for listening. And Christine and I will be back Wednesday. And thank you, Mary.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Take care.